If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56david.com. Atlantic Coast Mortgage, Equal Housing Lender, NMLS 643-114.
In Terry Savage's note to producer Pete and me, she said, you know, there's not something going on so burning and pressing that we have to absolutely solve a crisis. In other words, she wrote, it's summertime. Let's just relax and maybe go to the Ishnala Supper Club in Lake Delton, Wisconsin.
I said that.
Have you been to the Ishnala Supper Club?
No, but I keep hearing all the commercials, and I'm up in Wisconsin right now, and it's not that far away, and I'm giving it some serious thought because you, first of all, do you know that supper clubs are like a thing of the past, sort of like a relic of the 40s and 50s? And there are some in Wisconsin. I mean, the golf course near me has a Friday fish fry, and it's, everybody says it's like the old supper clubs.
Oh, yeah.
So supper clubs are a thing in Wisconsin. It's in the olden days, like in the 30s and 40s, when rich people and mobsters drove up to Wisconsin. You know, like remember Al Capone had a place up in Wisconsin?
Sure, sure.
And there's just a different atmosphere. It is so 180 degrees opposite all the chic restaurants in the West Loop that give you a plate with a few little pieces of something and a sauce on it, and everybody raves about it and pays a fortune. A supper club is just a different experience. I've been to a couple of them, and yeah, I think I'm going to have to do that this summer while I'm
I think there. The hallmarks of supper clubs are what? White tablecloth?
White tablecloth.
A relish like tray?
Exactly.
An old-fashioned
bread. And people drink drinks. Yes, they drink things
cocktails
that have a cherry in them, like a Manhattan or something like that.
Somebody named Marge.
Yes. Do you want to go together? Will you drive up here?
I would.
You and your wife stay overnight or something?
I haven't been there in a couple of years, and I need to make the journey. I've been there before, and then we stayed overnight, and then came back the next day.
Okay, well, let's make a plan. I think that would be fun.
But you're not a big drinker.
No, I'm not a big drinker, but even if I don't even drink anything that has a cherry in it since I had a Shirley Temple cocktail 100 years ago.
Let's talk.
But it sounds so good, so we should do it.
So are things pretty even keel right now? No major stress points today?
You know, I think everybody just kind of went away for the summer, especially this week. I look at the markets and, you know, not much is happening. Come on, waiting for the Fed minutes. That's such an excuse for why nothing's happening, because we already know what the Fed said. The Fed, they probably had a little internal argument when they had what they called a pause a couple of weeks ago. And we've already heard from the Fed chairman that, okay, we all sort of got around this pause thing, but we're not done yet. We're not done yet. In fact, interestingly, T-bills have been holding up pretty well at the auction, which is taking place about now. You'll probably get about 5.5% for six-month bills. And that's a pretty good yield. So I think that's certainly something you should consider.
I have a lot of questions and comments from our listeners for you. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. You can call or text right now. From last week, do you mind if I just throw a question at you?
Oh, yeah, sure.
This is more a comment. Hey, I want to thank Terry Savage. I took her advice, and I waited until I was 70 to file for my Social Security benefits. My benefits are now $1,500 a month higher than if I had waited until if I had taken them when I was 66. Thank you so much, Terry.
Oh, I'm so glad you followed that advice, if you could. We always caveat that a lot of people just, they're just barely making it. But if you take benefits early, I mean, it's like reaching the finish line and saying, I'm going to fall across it. Yeah, you get a check starting at 62, but it really impacts you. You get a 70% larger check if you wait until 70.
Are your benefits predicated on how much money you've earned and paid in over your lifetime?
Well, yeah, it's not exactly a one-to-one relationship.
Sure.
Because a lot of people get benefits who've never paid in. Someone's ex-spouse who never worked, but was married
for 10 years. Well, sounds high to me. Is that about average, or is that
no? Because the average Social Security benefit these days is about $1,800 or $1,900. That's the average, but there are many people that get well over $3,000, primarily because they were high earners, so they. Their income reached the maximum cap every year.
But that money gets taxed, right?
And when you get above a certain level of both Social Security and additional income, I have to always look that up, then a portion, up to 85% of your Social Security benefit will be taxed. But believe me, you want to get the highest base by waiting till 70, if you possibly can, using some IRA money, keeping working for an extra 2 years, because that higher base is not only so much higher in the initial check, but all future cost of living increases will be made on that higher base.
Here's another question. I'm looking to retire in the next 4 or 5 years. I'm 60 and my wife is 58. Are we better paying extra toward a mortgage, which has 7 years to go, or paying the extra money into our work Roth 401k? The mortgage is 375, and we both have 401ks.
Yeah, so that was my you know me so well. That was going to be my first question. If you, forever and ever, the goal was pay down your mortgage before you retire. It's just so freeing. I get that. I understand that. But now you're saying, historically, on average, the stock market has returned over 20-year periods about 10% with dividends reinvested. Now, we had a period a few years ago where we were getting 18%, 17%, and so forth. So we might have some below-average years. But if you're in your early 60s, you're probably going to live to your late 80s, maybe 90s. So you're going to need some stock market investments. If you can live with those, you can assume that you should earn close to 10%. So maybe not in the next 5 or 6 years on average.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I would say contribute more to the Roth and invest that conservatively and hang on to that 3.75% mortgage.
Especially if the money's only costing you less than 4 points, you're probably going to get better than 4 on money put elsewhere, right?
You could put it in treasury bills and get more.
Yeah,
you get 5.5% today. So the exception is a big asterisk. All those people, and you do remember this, and Steve Bertrand remembers it a couple of years ago when I kept saying, please refinance your mortgage now, get around 3%. You have a valuable asset, a low rate mortgage. Hang on to it.
Terry, just talk to me. We've got lots of calls and lots of text messages.
Okay.
But talk about the Medicare observation trap.
Okay, I've written two columns. The first one is up now at terrysavage.com and ran in papers around the country this Sunday, and the next one will be next week. This one is something that really catches people. It's not for all of you, but you need to know it. This is like the warning signs of stroke. You need to remember that you've heard this somewhere. Medicare pays for 100 days of skilled nursing or rehab after you've been admitted to a hospital. And so hospitals don't want to keep you for a very long time anymore as a patient, so they discharge you to skilled nursing because you need infusions, you need IV, you need shots or something, or rehab where you'll probably get not only rehabilitation but medical treatment. And you get 100 days paid for by Medicare if you've been admitted to a hospital. And that's a really nice thing. The question is, were you really admitted to the hospital? Now, if you're younger and thinking, well, I don't even want to listen to this, Medicare doesn't apply to me, it will apply to you if it's your parents that fall into this trap and you're the one visiting them at the hospital, running to the emergency room with them, or a friend of a senior who goes in, rides in with the ambulance or into the emergency room. They're going to check you over right away. They're going to ask you, what's your insurance? You're going to say, oh, I have Medicare and a supplement, or I have Medicare Advantage. Okay, they know you're cool. And they're going to give you all the best treatment. And everybody's going to be running around. Let's do a scan. Let's do a test. Let's do a blood test, whatever, x-rays. And then they're going to say, all right, we're going to wait. We're going to do this all over again in a couple of hours. So we're putting you here in this nice bay. And then they come back and say, well, you look stable now. We're going to send you home. That's great. But what if they say, you look stable now, but I think we need to observe you for a while. We're going to transfer you to our observation place, or you can stay right here. And you're there even overnight. Or sometimes they'll transfer you to observation and say, well, we don't have a room yet, so we're going to keep you down here. That way we can keep a better eye on you. They have not admitted you. You are under observation status. If at the end of that overnight stay they say, you know, we're going to transfer you to rehab, which happened to a friend of mine, or we're going to transfer you to, you're going to need extended care for this. We'll provide the ambulance and we'll transfer you. Then you were not officially admitted, and the Medicare will not pay for your 100 days of skilled nursing care. And you're going to get a bill, if you're in there for that long, for $40,000 or $50,000 or $100,000. The key is your status, observation or admitted. You can't really bully them into it, but on the other hand, you could show them you're very well aware and that if they're keeping you overnight, you want to be admitted. And just because they say they don't have a room for you doesn't mean you can't be very pushy.
Well, can't they just check
care.
A box? I mean, wherever the heck you are, just say admitted, and then
the thing kicks in. You know, you're worried about you're having a heart attack or a stroke or whatever it is that brought you in. You're not worrying. Your friend is worrying about, is she going to be okay? Is he going to be okay? No one, I mean, yes, they're supposed to tell you this, but at the time they were rushing around trying to figure out what's
Terry,
wrong.
I've been through this movie many times. I have never had this conversation with
That's right. Now, let me tell you why. Because once they, let me give you the background to this, and I've served on the board of a hospital, and they're just being practical. They get dinged a lot if you're admitted to a hospital, released, and then readmitted. That really dings them on the Medicare records and so forth. So they don't want to admit you unless they know that they're really going to need to keep you there. So they just, I mean, they've built bays for observation where they tell you you're going to get much closer monitoring of your heart vitals and your all these machines you're connected to.
Whatever.
But you're not admitted.
If I spend the night there or more than 8 hours there, in my mind,
it's not automatic.
Okay, but then as an advocate for my elderly parents, I need to be aware of what you just said.
Yes.
And advocate for admittance rather than observation.
Exactly. Now, you know, and one Medicare, one hospital, not executive or whatever, administrator, wrote to me and said, you know, we can only admit based on the statistical criteria that Medicare, And I said, well, thank you very much for sending me that nice email. But I got another nice email from someone who said, oh, thank God you wrote this. It cost us $50,000 because we didn't realize that my mom wasn't admitted before they transferred her to rehab. And
then they had, and that
and
was,
you
that
know,
wasn't
oh,
the
one
hospital
other thing.
Cost. That was the rehab cost then.
Because Medicare wasn't paying. Oh, yeah. One other key thing. I really, since this column runs around the country, I get received emails from all over. And someone else who's in the insurance or senior business, what do we call it, wrote me and said, you know, this problem is particularly horrible with Medicare Advantage plans. Because they don't, you don't wind up giving them your supplemental insurance, and Medicare Advantage plans don't tell you immediately that your claim is denied. So, and they also require you jump through a lot of hoops before going to a hospital. So even if you went to the emergency room and you weren't admitted, they're going to be really fast to turn you down for skilled nursing. It's one of the disadvantages of Medicare Advantage plans. So you must know, just remember this, if it's your mom, if it's yourself, if it's your friend. Are you in the hospital? Yeah. Are you in a bed in the hospital? Yeah, they took me off the gurney. Are you in a room? Maybe not, but a nicer cubicle after I got out of the emergency bay. So I'm in the hospital. I'm calling everybody. I'm in the hospital. You may be in, but you're not admitted. And if you're not admitted, then any further care that you get in skilled care in a nursing home or rehab will not be paid for by Medicare.
Terry, just lots of response from your observation about are you in observation or are you admitted at a hospital? Anything else you want to say before I just read a couple of these?
No, I just wanted to issue that warning. Next week, I'll have another warning for you. Equally unique, strange, and out there, something you wouldn't know, actually something that caught me by surprise. So that's next week's column,
which I've
already written. We'll do that next week.
By the way, Terry was just talking about if you are admitted or somebody you know goes to a hospital, is not admitted, know the status. If they are in observation but not admitted, if you get released and then need some sort of follow-up care, Medicare doesn't pay for it unless you were first admitted.
Not follow-up care. If you get sent directly from the hospital to a nursing facility where you need care that's not just custodial care, but nursing care,
skilled nursing.
Medicare usually pays for 100 days, but not if you haven't been previously admitted. Not just in there, not just I was in the emergency room, not just they had me overnight for observation because they were really worried, but admitted. Okay, that's a big word.
Hey, Terry, I just went through this with my father. I got a bill for $35,000 for observation. Eventually, he was changed to admitted, but it's very confusing and nobody explained it. And this email says, Terry,
Let me stop you right there. Wait, you didn't get a bill for observation. You got a bill for the care that was given after he was transferred to a nursing facility because he was only under observation in the hospital, and so Medicare wouldn't pay the nursing facility. That was your $35,000 bill. That's not a surprise. Go ahead, John. I'm sorry.
708 said, I work for one of the big three medical centers in Chicago. Under 48 hours is observation. They now have floors with observation rooms that look like a hospital floor. The hospital has to make a decision to admit you or discharge you on the 47 and a half hour. They cannot classify it then as observation. But Terry, I'm surprised that you can be in the care of a hospital for that long.
For that long. Exactly.
This is the biggest confusion for the patient.
So just suppose you were in observation. Yes, hospitals are converting other space to observation bays, they call them. So if you have been in observation and then they say, you know, we've observed you, you're going to need some more care, but you really don't need to be in a room here because you don't want to be in a room here. We're going to send you to a rehabilitation center. You say, oh, no, you're not. Not unless you have admitted me here for at least 24 hours. And then we know Medicare will pay for that additional care somewhere else, skilled care. Okay? So that's it. Yes, you. It looks like a hospital. It breathes like a hospital. The doctors and nurses act like they're in a hospital. You're under observation.
Maggie, you're on WGN. What can we do for you?
Yes, I just had a question. My husband was taken by ambulance to Central DuPage, and they were very upfront. They said they not only had to admit him, they had to keep him for 3 days before skilled nursing would pay for. And he did go into skilled nursing for 90 days.
Because I didn't come across it in my research for this, but I will check that out.
I'm glad at least they were up front with you when you walked in there, Maggie.
Very much so. And he came home from the skilled nursing and fell like 2 days later
and had
to go back to the hospital. And they kept him again and said, hey, we got to keep him for 3 days. And then
that's great.
Pay another
Maggie,
$100.
You're right. I just wanted to reconfirm that. The individual must be assigned as admitted and billed under Medicare Part A for at least 3 days in order for Medicare to help cover the cost of a skilled nursing facility stay. 3 days. But I think I'll add that to my column.
This is for Terry Savage. If I work till I'm 72 at a company that has medical benefits, what do I do when I hit 64 or 65 and am eligible for Medicare?
Okay, well, probably you will sign up for Medicare Part A, but as long as you have commensurate coverage, you will stick with your corporate benefits. Medicare Part B, because you're still working, could be expensive, and then you'd need Part D, which is the drug prescription drug part of it. So you probably have great coverage at work. So you'd probably stick with your plan. But there is one caveat. Once you sign up for any part of Medicare, you can no longer contribute to a health savings account. And there are big penalties if you don't know that and do. So if you're going to stick with your company coverage, you want to make sure you're no longer contributing to a health savings account. Your old one can continue to grow. And then it becomes a little more complicated because if your spouse is on your benefits, there may be some restrictions on your spouse as well, and your spouse may make a different decision. There are two places that actually do this kind of calculation for you, and it gets complicated, especially if you have a spouse to consider. And the first one is 65incorporated.com, and the other is healthcareinfo.com. Let me just see if I can get you that resource. But where you want to pay up, you'll pay up front, but to make sure you make the correct decision because it's going to stick with you for a long time.
But so, may I insert a question here?
Yeah, sure.
That is, if this person says they must be in their early 60s, but when you get to a certain age, do you have to register with Medicare or somebody, or you don't have to worry about it until you quit working?
No. So let me back up, and then I'll give you those two names for getting help on making a complex decision. Medicare Part A is the hospital insurance. Mm-hmm. It doesn't cost you anything. If you're working, your work health insurance automatically becomes a secondary payer to Medicare Part A, the hospitalization. So you should register at medicare.gov for Part A. It doesn't cost you anything. It does impact your ability to keep contributing to a health savings account if you have that at work. Part B, as long as you have the comparable coverage and the drug coverage from your employment, and it's easier or you want to just stick with your work plan or something like that, you don't have to sign up for Part B, but you want to do it 6 months before you retire so there won't be any gap. Then you sign up for Part B.
Go back to Part A then. But is there a certain age at which you
65.
Need? So
but the last thing that 65 counts for is Medicare Part A.
So you should sign up for Medicare Part A, regardless of whether or not you're working.
Regardless, you might as well. It doesn't cost you anything, but it does impact your health savings account contributions.
Well, then, but then maybe I want to still have an HSA, a health savings account.
Then you don't sign up for Part A, but there's a question about whether if you work for a – there is another caveat. If you work for an employer with fewer than 20 employees, I believe it is, 20 or 30, 20 employees, then you must sign up for Medicare Part B the minute you become eligible for that.
Part
so that's
A or
another
Part B.
Caveat.
Part A or Part
B. Part A, but, and also Part B.
Okay.
That's a little twist in the rules. What I want to tell you is it's not just one of those things where, hey, you're 21, now you can take your driver's license and go drink or whatever it used to be, or you're 16, you could go take the test and drive. This is a complicated decision. It's complicated based on what your other coverage is at work, how many employees your employer has. If it's over 20, then you can delay. It is complicated based on the issue of a health savings account. So let me give you two resources. They're not inexpensive, but and it's more complicated by the fact you have a spouse who's either using your benefits or using his or her benefits, and maybe that will impact their benefits if you discontinue your work benefits.
Mm-hmm.
You need some counseling, and it is I'd love to give you, there are some places you can go. Two places I know of that you can go where you're going to spend about $1,000, maybe a little more. They are healthcarenavigation.com and 65 Incorporated, spelled out. The number is 65 and then incorporated.com, spelled out. They specialize in telling you how to approach taking Medicare benefits. You do this just before you're 65, so you make all the right decisions. The other place that you can get help is the State Health Insurance Assisted Program, SHIP. SHIP, that offers one-on-one counseling regarding Medicare. But if you really seriously you're working and you have great coverage, I suggest you get good counseling. I can't do that offhand because look, I immediately forgot about, oh, wait a minute, what about the 20
yeah.
employees? They know it's serious stuff. What about your spouse? Well, could she get transferred to her work and then she could contribute to a health savings?
65incorporated.com
yep. and healthcare. 65incorporated.com and healthcarenavigation.com.
More of your calls and lots of good text today, too, for Terry. Lots of information. Lots of more business news on the Wintrust Business Lunch today with Ryan Burrow.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute. NBC Sports says an average 4.8 million people tuned in for the NASCAR Cup Series race in Chicago Sunday. That's the highest ratings for a NASCAR race since the Daytona 500 in February on Fox. The peak was 5.3 million at the end of the race. Chicago viewers tuned in. The race got over a 9 rating in Chicago. For the Daytona 500, Chicago only had a 3 rating. Minimum wages went up just before the 4th of July holiday in Chicago. Employers with 21 or more employees must pay $15.80 an hour, and fewer than 21 employees, $15 an hour. The new minimum wage in Cook County is $13.70. Tipped workers are paid $8 an hour. North Suburban-based Abbott has announced FDA approval of the first-ever dual-chamber leadless pacemaker. The company says the approval increases access to leadless pacing for millions of people across the U.S. That's your Wintrust Business Minute. I'm Ryan Burrow.
Here's the business of food and Steve Alexander.
Thank you. El Nino is making headlines again. Reuters carried a story yesterday about El Nino emerging in the Pacific Ocean for the first time in 7 years, likely to bring extreme weather, including record heat, heavy rainfall, and severe drought to much of the world. And here in the Corn Belt, a warm and dry winter. Now, what's it all about, Brad?
I think probably the best way to go about this is to take a little history lesson, the origins of the name.
And we will, after I thank the Chevy Silverado HD for sponsoring us today. Experience your life in HD. Visit ChevyDriveChicago.com. Okay, USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey.
This year, we actually started El Nino for the first time since 2018, 2019. It was officially announced just a few weeks ago. That is uncharacteristically early. Was originally named by Peruvian fishermen many centuries ago, noticed that around Christmas time, every 2 to 7 years, they would notice warming along the coast. So they came to call this El Nino with a capital N. So to them, that was named the Christ Child. And that indicated that they saw this warm water that chased away their catch, their anchovies, and would ruin their fishing harvest.
So basically, they were cursing the loss of their fish?
That might not be quite the right way to look at it.
And in the years when the water cooled?
Just for clarification and simplification, scientists came to call that La Nina, which we just came out of after 3 years.
Got it. But El Nino is going to cause us, thousands of miles away from the Pacific, to have a warm and dry winter?
Yeah, it seems kind of crazy, but it also affects the polar jet stream, which tends to influence weather patterns across the Midwest. So some areas in the Midwest may well experience a mild, dry winter for 2023-2024. Attributable to the developing El Nino.
Well, all right, that's what to look forward to next winter. But for now, parts of the corn and bean belt have had rain the last few days. A lot did not, though, and there's still catching up to do as we approach a critical time for corn pollination. Thank you, Brad Rippey.
Sure.
From the farm to your belly, today's National Graham Cracker Day and National Apple Turnover Day. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
Terry Savage joins us for about 6-7 more minutes on the Wintrust Business Lunch. You can tell she's typing away, looking up important information.
No, I was answering someone who sent me a very strange question, and I was passing it forward to my buddy Larry Kotlikoff. It was a complicated Social Security question.
Ready for more questions from our listeners?
Yes, ready.
I have $100,000 in cash to invest. Can I buy treasury bills with that?
Yes, absolutely. Go to terrysavage.com. On the right-hand side, scroll down a little bit, and there's a box marked How to Buy Treasury Bills. It'll give you instructions how to do that. The auctions take place on Mondays. So this coming Monday, I would think if you buy a six-month T-bill, the yield should be close to 5.5%.
I'm 50 years old. What's the best investment I can make right now for retirement?
Money. I mean, I don't know what choices you have. Do you have a 401k plan at work where they match? Put the money in there. You'll get free money from your boss. How would you invest? At 50, you still have probably 40 more years of life expectancy. So I'd buy the S&P 500 stock index fund or the total market index fund inside that plan. Mm-hmm. If you don't have a plan at work, but you're earning money, open a Roth IRA. You won't get a deduction, but you can go to Vanguard or Fidelity, open the account, put at least half in the S&P 500 fund. Or just save some money. Nobody ever complained about having too much money in retirement.
Ask Terry what her thoughts are on the projected Social Security shortfall in 2034, where benefits will be paid at 80% if nothing is done.
Yeah, well, Larry and I are, here's a secret announcement, it's going to slip out. Larry and I are writing a book, not about that, but about our Social Security horror stories, which we think are more imminent and more dangerous right now than that. But we know that Congress will have to do something. We know they'll wait a long time. They always do. Think about the debt ceiling. What could have been more critical than the U.S.'s credit rating, and they waited till the last minute. They will raise the age for retirement. They will increase the amount of income that
right.
is taxed and so forth. So I just wouldn't stress out about it now. It's, you know, I feel very Scarlett O'Hara about that. Well, think about it tomorrow, dear.
312-981-7200. Pete, our next call is, stand by. Wally, you're on WGN Radio. How can we help you, Wally? You're on the air.
Hey, good afternoon, John and
Terry, yes.
Terry, God bless your book. Hey, a simple question. How is that treasury bills, how are they compounded? For example, if I invested $10,000 next Monday, in 6 months, what would that amount to?
It would amount to $10,000. That's the weird thing about treasury bills. When you buy T-bills at the auction, whatever the rate is, they leave the interest in your account up front, and they take out $9,782 or whatever the rest of it is the interest. It stays in your account. It can earn interest in your money market account at the bank in the interim. But you get that rate for 6 months. You'll get your full $10,000 back, or you can have it automatically renew again when it matures at whatever the rate is then.
But that's an annual rate, too.
It's an annual rate that you only get for 6 months. And
so
then in
half.
6 months, you'll, the interest is half of the amount that you would have earned annually.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well,
so if it was
$1,000
worth of interest you would have earned in a year, they will take out $9,500 and leave $500 in upfront interest in your account, which you can leverage or spend or do whatever you want with. And at maturity, they'll put the full $10,000 in, or if you auto-renewed, and let's just say the rate had gone up, then they would leave, then they would drop the interest for 6 months at that rate back into your checking account or the account you have at the bank.
Got it. Let's pick up with Ronnie around WGN. What can we do for you, Ronnie?
Hi, Kay. Hi, John. This is totally the opposite of retirement and benefits. My granddaughter asked me how she can invest $1,500 to $2,000. She's 18 years old. She's been working part-time since she's 16, and she saved this amount. I'm really proud of her, and I'd like to help her out.
Okay. Well, first of all, is she going to apply for financial aid for college?
Yes.
Okay, money in her name, I hate to disillusion her, it's not going to be that big a penalty, but money in her name counts much more heavily against her. I would suggest that you open up a Roth IRA account for her at Fidelity or Vanguard and buy just the S&P 500 stock index fund in that Roth IRA. She has the earned income. Her parents will declare it on their return, so she can have an IRA. And if she earned $1,500 but spent $500 of it, you can add $500 back in. And that money will grow tax-free for her when she's really old. But if she was planning on spending it at college or for a computer or something like that, I hate to try and encourage her to spend it, but she'll have to reveal that on the financial aid application. So she might as well spend it on a computer in that case.
I hope that helps. Good luck to you both.
I'll send you one more place. Go to stockpile.com. Let's just suppose she really wanted to buy a Nike because the shoes now are Nike or whatever it might be that's hot. She can go to stockpile.com and open a custodial account. You should open the custodial account for her. Better idea. Rethinking this. Go to stockpile.com, Wendy, go to stockpile.com, open an account, let her pick the stocks for the company she uses, and you be the custodian. It won't be reported on her financial aid form, and she can buy and sell stocks. That's where you go.
Ronnie, I hope that helps. I'm sure it has. We're out of time. Next week, Terry, let's pick up on Medicare Part A and B and HSA accounts and the art and science of that. We've got a lot of questions about them. We're out of time today.
I will be sitting next to you next week, God willing, so we will do that.